all 68 public use airports in South Carolina in a single day. Ron Schreck's been flying his RV-8 again. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Ron Schreck, who lives in Gold Hill, North Carolina. Ron is a pilot and has done something remarkable, kind of surprising, maybe not shocking, given what he did last year on the 4th of July. Last year, on July 4th, he visited all 109 public use airports in North Carolina in a single day. And this year, you kind of surprised at least me by doing the same thing with all 68 public use airports in South Carolina in a single day on July 4th. Ron, thanks for joining us today.
Well, it's good to be with you again.
Ron, I guess the obvious first question is, when you did all 109 public use airports in North Carolina in a single day last year, were you already thinking ahead to South Carolina this year?
No, I never planned to do the North Carolina airports until kind of the very last minute. But then after I did that, many of my friends said, what's next? So South Carolina seemed to be the obvious choice since it's my nearest neighboring state. So I guess I've started something here, and I don't think I'll live long enough to do all 50 states, but certainly looks like I'll be knocking off a few of the Atlantic Coast states and the ones around my home in North Carolina as the years go by.
Ron, what made you decide that visiting all the airports in a given state in a single day would be a fun thing to do or a useful thing to do? What made you decide to do this?
We were just sitting around with a bunch of buddies in the hangar one day, and we had a copy of a very nice little booklet that the North Carolina Department of Transportation puts out, and it had all the 109 airports in North Carolina listed with pictures and data and everything. And somebody said, gee, that'd be kind of neat to go land at all of those sometime. And then somebody else said, I wonder if you could do it in one day. Well, that's where it started. So here we are.
Well, and you have an RV, a Vans RV-8, which seems to be the ideal plane to try this in.
Yeah, it is. It's got good speed, and so I average usually around 115 knots throughout the tour, and I can slow to pretty good speed to land on turf airfields or smaller airfields. So it's got a little bit of both worlds, slow speed capability and high speed to make it not such a long day.
Now, I think the RV-8 is specified for a Lycoming 0320. It sounds like you've put the 0360 in it. What kind of capabilities does this plane have?
Well, it does have the 0360, 180 horsepower, and mine is fuel injected, and I have a constant speed prop on it. The horsepower does not give me a whole lot of additional speed. The 0320 is still a very fast airplane. What it does give me is extra climb capability and short field capability. And the constant speed prop, of course, even adds to that capability. So going in and out of short, unimproved or grass strips is really not a problem with this aircraft.
All right, let's go back to last year's July 4th stunt where you visited 109 airports in North Carolina in a day. And if I recall correctly, you made it well short of 24 hours.
We did. I think it was just short of 20 hours. This attempt at South Carolina was certainly easier. There was only 68 airports, and so I didn't even have to fly at night. So this was a comparative breeze.
Well, tell us how you got hooked up with William Cook. Now, he's a professor of mathematics at Georgia Tech. And tell us why his help was necessary to make this work out.
Well, when I first started looking into making the attempt at North Carolina, one of my friends suggested that this looks like a traveling salesman problem. And I had never heard of that problem. And he said, well, go look it up on the Internet. So I did. And the problem is very simple, but the solution turns out to be quite complex. The problem involves a traveling salesman who wants to visit all of his clients in different cities, and he wants to know the shortest, most economical route to take to visit all those cities and then return to his home city. When you get to about 12 cities, the number of permutations exceeds 1 billion. And so the exact solution for 109 airports to visit was a complex problem that I had no idea how to do. But I ran across Professor William Cook from Georgia Tech in my internet explorations, and I contacted him. And it turns out that he's been studying this problem for years, and he has developed an algorithm that approximates the absolute perfect solution for any given problem. And he was excited about my attempt at 109 airports in North Carolina, and so I emailed him the coordinates of all the airports, and he plugged them into his algorithm and came back with the perfect routing for the minimum distance to cover all 109 airports. And he did this last year, and then again this year for the South Carolina tour, he did the same thing. So I'm quite indebted to him. He takes a lot of the flight planning work out of my hands.
Well, now, does Professor Cook have commercial ambitions for this software, or is he working on this just as a kind of see, I told you I could do it basis?
You know, I'm not really sure. He does have a website, and I don't know it offhand, but I think if you Google traveling salesman problem and William Cook, you'll quickly get to his website. I do know that he tours throughout the world to discuss his algorithm with other interested mathematicians. So he's made quite a lifetime effort at this, in addition to his teaching duties at Georgia Tech.
Well, I think we're going to look into this more closely, because I had not really understood how complex these problems get, but it is remarkable how complicated they get, because if you talk to computer geeks, even people who work on supercomputers, they tell you that even for something like a Cray, you know, one of the big computers the military uses, that problems like this are just massive. And it's a real achievement to be able to figure out a simpler program, or one that can run more quickly, that can come out with something close to, if not right on, the perfect solution for this. Well, now, when we come back from our break, I want to talk to you about the future, because you have joked about only 48 states to go. And I want to talk to you about that possibility, and also just your thoughts in general on flying in with today's fuel prices and rising costs for everything else. My guest is Ron Schreck. We're talking about his trip to all 68 public use airports in the state of South Carolina in a single day on July 4th. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking today with Ron Schreck of Gold Hill, North Carolina, who flew his RV-8 to all 68 public use airports in the state of South Carolina on July 4th, after having done the same thing in North Carolina, where there were 109 airports to visit last year on July 4th. Ron has joked that there's only 48 states to go. Ron, how serious are you about that?
Well, it's hard to be really serious about it when you realize that Texas alone has 392 public use airports.
Right.
I'm tempted to leave that to somebody that's younger and more ambitious than me. But certainly I'm looking at Virginia next year, perhaps. They've got 66 airports, and a bit of a challenge because a couple of them are in the Washington ADIS, so that will present a little more difficulty to the trip, but certainly nothing insurmountable.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, Virginia has a really neat program, too, where if you visit all their public use airports, even if you don't fly there, and attend a safety seminar or two and visit their museums, They have a program called the Virginia Aviation Ambassadors Program where you could earn yourself a very nice leather flight jacket for that.
I have heard of the program, and although I might land at all their airports, I don't think I've got time to stop and get the little passport stamped by the FBO at each one of them. But I have looked at the program, and you might also know that I hear that North Carolina is starting a similar program in October.
Well, I think that's a great thing, and it leads me to ask about recreational flying or flying as a private pilot in general. Because I hear a lot of people talk, you can't walk into a hangar at a small airport anymore without hearing one of the conversations going on being about fuel costs and or insurance costs or hangar costs or anything else. It seems flying has taken, a healthy jump with fuel prices going up in terms of what it costs the average guy. How do you justify, in your own personal budgeting, continuing to fly as much as you do?
Well, I actually can't justify it. I'm kind of semi-retired, and so working harder is not always an option to get more expendable income. And I have cut down on my flying. I know days I used to just say, it's a beautiful day, I'm going to go up and do some acro or go for that $100 hamburger. But I think twice about it now, and I think I have cut down on my personal flying some. It's interesting that I went to the internet. AirNav has a wonderful site to check fuel prices. And before my trip to South Carolina, I checked fuel prices all along the route. And interestingly enough, there were only three airports in all of South Carolina with 100 low lead prices under $5 a gallon. It's kind of scary to see the prices go up, and it makes you wonder if General Aviation can take the added expense. I certainly hope we can do something about the prices, but I'm not too optimistic at this point.
Well, I think we're going to have to learn to run our aircraft on something other than 100 low lead, because I think that's going to be kind of a boutique fuel distillate product here in the next couple of years. Do you think this represents, you talk about wanting to publicize the fact that there are, 17,500 some odd public use airports in the United States, and a lot of them are small ones. Do you think that this trend in fuel prices represents a danger to the survival of some of these small airports?
Well, I'm sure it must. Many of them depend on general aviation only as their source of income, especially the private airports that are offered for public use. Many of these are not getting any public funding, and they are open at the whim of their private owners. So there's very little that AOPA or the FAA or any other group can do to keep these open if the owner decides that it's just not profitable to be in business anymore. Now, those that receive FAA funding, that's another story. They are kind of obligated to continue operations as long as they're receiving that funding. But the private-owned public-use airports are really in danger as long as people are curtailing their flying activities because of fuel costs.
Have you heard from any of the operators of these small airports you visited in terms of a difference it's made or any publicity that's come their way as a result of your trip?
Not from the airport operators per se, but I have been in contact with the North Carolina Department of Transportation. There's a gentleman that works there that I've been in contact with ever since my North Carolina tour. And as a result of my tour, he was encouraged to start the North Carolina Airport Visitation Program, kind of on the heels of the Virginia program that you mentioned. So in that respect, I think it's been helpful. As far as individual airports, haven't heard from any yet.
Okay, I probably should have asked you this at the beginning, but I think our listeners might be interested to know your aviation background. How did you get to the point where you are able to do this with your life?
Well, I guess I'm double retired. I spent 20 years flying fighters in the Air Force, and then I worked for a major airline for another 14 years before I retired at age 60. And now I'm a contract pilot with a Part 135 operator, and we do mostly work with government contracts with the Forest Service, working wildfires, and with NOAA doing strange things like marine mammal surveys for NOAA or the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
So this gives me a little bit of income to spend on that expensive gas, but it also gives me the freedom to take off when I want to, and I just tell my boss that I'm going to be gone to do a airport tour for a day or two, and he just tells me to give him a call when I get back, and he'll see what kind of job he's got for me. So being a contract pilot in your pre-retirement years is really beneficial.
Well, yeah, living the life, I guess, by the perspective of a lot of our listeners, probably. Well, a lot of former jet jockeys love the Vans RV series. Do you find that this takes you back at all when you fly your RV-8?
Well, I chose the RV-8 to build initially because I did have a fighter experience, having flown F-4s and F-16s, F-105s, among others. And there is a feel to a fighter, and it's a balanced control. Certainly, the RV-8 has none of the speed or power of a jet fighter, but the control feel is very similar, and it's that balanced feel that I really enjoy, and especially when I'm flying in formation. Speed is all relative when you're in formation. It doesn't matter whether you're doing 180 knots or 480 knots. That relative motion formation is pretty much the same.
Well, I have looked in the cockpits of RV-8s and especially a lot of the smaller Vans planes. They looked very much like some Warbird cockpits I'd seen, too, just in the way they're laid out.
Well, being a home-built airplane, you have the luxury of designing your cockpit and your panel pretty much any way you want. Some people go for the plush, modern effect. Mine is pretty much a military-style cockpit. So it gives that impression.
Well, so is it pretty much a go for Virginia next year if all goes as planned?
Well, I was thinking of any of the contiguous states around North Carolina. Virginia has 66 airports, Georgia has 108, and Tennessee has 82. So one of those three is probably the best bet for next year. But I'm looking hard at Virginia. Everybody seems to think that that's the logical next step.
All right. Well, Ron, it's fun to see somebody having this much fun with an aircraft. I think it inspires all of us who fly recreationally. Congratulations on the accomplishment. Thanks for what you're doing for small airports. And we look forward to talking to you next year.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you, Paul. Next year it is.
My guest has been Ron Schreck, and you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.